When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets, in the car while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Everybody, ooh, y'all, welcome back to a new episode of Her with Amina Brown. I hope you are in some ways getting into a little bit of a summer vibe as you are listening to this episode, because we are here in the living room with a guest. And I am so excited to welcome writer, journalist, culture and arts critic, co-host of the hit NPR podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour, and author of Wannabe, Reckonings with the Pop Culture That Shapes Me. Welcome, Aisha Harris.
Hi, Amina. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm here clapping for us because in my mind, Aisha, even though, as you know, when we were podcasting, we were recording for an audience of zero. You know, that's present with us while we record.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
I am always imagining there are at least like 30 people here with me live, even though it's just us here. So I had to clap for myself and the other 29 of us that are here live.
I appreciate it. I love it. Get that energy going.
That's it. That's it. So glad to have you on the podcast. So many things I want to dig into, but I want to start with something that's very important, which is snacks. So a part of the premise of the Her with Amina Brown living room comes from this idea that when my girlfriends come over, especially if they're very close to me, sometimes the conversation gets to a point where it's like, this is not for a coffee shop. This is not for a restaurant. Like, we need to really be in each other's house so we can fully talk our things. And sometimes depending on one's busyness or one's financial availabilities, there's like sort of an ad hoc snack situation. You know, there's like a girl, I got 3.5 bell peppers I'm about to bring over there. And I'm like, I got 3/4 of this hummus that I started a little bit. And we just bring our little snacks together. So I want to know, when you get together with your friends, when you're in this living room situation, what is your snack that you would see yourself bringing to the living room?
I'm gonna sound a bit like an alcoholic, but probably the alcohol.
I respect this.
I have an abundance of alcohol in my apartment right now. My partner subscribes to a monthly wine club, and he kept forgetting to put it on pods because we don't drink that much wine. Like, these are cases of wine. And I'm just like, where are we going to put this? We live in a townhouse. We don't have a wine cellar or anything. It makes for a very good party favor. Like, if you, I'm now in my 30s. So dinner parties and all that are the things that are my friends and I are doing. And so instead of having to be like, oh, what should I bring? I'm just like, grab a bottle of wine. I don't even know if it's good, but that's what we're bringing. So wine usually, or some sort of beer or cocktail mix.
I feel that this is a correct choice. This feels like the right thing to do. I mean, my first, like what I felt was my first grown birthday gift. I think I was like 24, 25. And this man bought me like a bottle of wine for my birthday. And I was like, an adult. I'm like officially grown now. Was it a bottle of Yellowtail? Sure. Does that matter at this moment? No, it was that bottle that really mattered. I feel like you just, in most situations, you're going to win. It feels very sophisticated bringing a bottle of wine.
Yellowtail in your 20s is totally, totally fine. But you know, even in your 30s, just do what you got to do. If you like it, you like it. That's how I feel.
I feel if you like it enough to drink it, you'll do that. If not, it goes great in a spaghetti sauce. It's like there's always going to be a use somewhere for that bottle of wine. So I give a shout out to that. I also want to know, do you have a favorite writing snack when you were writing your book, or generally when you're writing, do you have a snack or some set of snacks that you're like, this is what I have to have for my writing process?
No, actually, I'm not really a snacker.
Okay.
Or at least not in that way. I tend to snack when I am watching something or reading, but actually just like when I'm writing, snack is just one more thing. Like trying to eat while writing is just one more thing that's going to distract me. And I'm already a very huge procrastinator. So adding in trying to actually feed myself at the same time, it just doesn't work. So I usually have a tea with me or some sort of beverage of some sort. You know, I'm not going to lie, I will sometimes also have a glass of wine or something to get the brain a little lubricated and loose and not all hung up in my thoughts as I can be when I'm completely sober. But yeah, I'm not really a snacker while working. Can't say that I am.
I feel you on the use of snacks as procrastination, because I like to ask other writers this, because that's definitely a thing for me of like, oh man, I sat down to write, but I feel like I probably need some brownies. I probably need to bake those brownies from scratch. I probably need to bake two batches so I can give some just anything to not sit there.
Yes. You know how I know that it's gotten really bad? It's when I decide, oh, I think I'll just like clean right now of write.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, in what other world would I worry about a baseboard? Never. Never. I don't care, except when I stare at the cursor and I'm like, you know, anything's better than this. Anything's better than this.
Let me get to that grout in my bathtub.
Let's see what the tile's doing. Anything but right. Please, please. Okay. I also want to ask you, when you were approaching what is now Wannabe, how did the idea of the book arrive to you? And I'm always curious about this when I'm talking to other authors, because for those of us, and this was me once and is many, you know, future book authors, where they are sort of on the other side of that. Like, I've always dreamed to write a book, or I hear a lot of people telling me to write a book, but not always knowing like, what is the actual process? So how did Wannabe as an idea arrive to you?
Yeah, I was kind of in a similar boat where for a few years I had editors and agents approaching me as like, you should write a book. You know, they'd seen my work in Slate or the New York Times, which was where I was previously. And I, you know, I met with some agents and I talked about that. And I never really came upon the right idea. It took me a while. At first I thought, oh, is there some movie that has been ignored or something where I can kind of like bring it to the surface in a new way and heavy interview style, sort of history digging. One of my favorite authors and one of my favorite books and I don't read too many books more than once, but one that I have read several times is Mark Harris's Pictures at a Revolution. First of all, no relation to him, but I do respect him. And That book is basically a history of the 1967-68 Academy Awards, and it covers the five Best Picture nominees. And he does this great job of sort of putting together this a thesis around how this was sort of where Hollywood was dividing in between the old and the classic Hollywood, the studio style Hollywood, and the new Hollywood, which was, you know, the Scorsese years and those sorts of things. And it's really, really fascinating. It's deeply reported and deeply researched. And at first I thought, oh, I want to do something similar to that. But I couldn't find the right subject. And who knows, maybe somewhere down the line, the right subject will come along where it's a little bit more nerdier. Not that my book isn't nerdy. It's very nerdy, but nerdy in a different way. And so ultimately, just before the pandemic, I had another editor reach out to me, Daniela, who is great. And, you know, she said, you know, have you thought about writing a book? I'm like, yes, I have. but I haven't stumbled upon the right thing. And she put me in touch with an agent, and my agent, Aaliyah, also wonderful, really kind of helped me sort of figure out, okay, Here are things you could do. And like, what is one thing that, like, what kind of themes or what kind of format do you keep coming back to when you think about yourself writing a book? And I said to myself, you know, well, so much of my work is about writing in essay form, critical essays, reviews, that sort of thing. Maybe I should just do that. And I decided I wanted to sort of talk about, make it personal, deeply personal, but also critical and kind of assessing how pop culture has had such a huge influence on me. Yes, it is what I do in my you know, professional life, but it's also very much just always been a part of my life since I was out, like came out of the womb. So, and I wanted to make something that people, especially millennials who are my age, and who grew up in the 80s and the 90s, they can relate to. But I think also there are plenty of themes within this story that so many people can kind of understand and relate to regardless of their background. And when I say I talk about sort of the fatigue of the franchisification of everything in Hollywood and how everything needs a spinoff and how everything needs a gritty reboot or a prequel. And I think that for me, it's important to sort of acknowledge that even if you are not like me and you're not, you know, a pop culture reporter, an arts reporter or whatever, we are all affected by it. And I was hoping that people would get a sense of how we can maybe change our relationship to how these things affect us, or just think about how these things make us respond to ourselves and also to each other, especially on social media. It's just like, it's really interesting to think about how we are in this weird moment where there's like more things to consume than ever before. Things are at our fingertips, movies, TV shows. You can find pretty much the most niche, interests or fetishes or whatever. You can find some version of it somewhere. But how does that affect us? And how does that make us sometimes go a little, like do things that we maybe should, like do or say things that we maybe shouldn't, or how does that make us feel bad about ourselves, or, you know, those sorts of things. So it really kind of evolved out of my desire to both, share a little bit more of myself and my upbringing and where I've come from, but also, you know, look at where we are now on a larger scale in terms of the culture and how we talk about these things.
I really loved that you chose pop culture as the lens for your book. I thought that was it made it really interesting to me, because it kind of felt like it had these like concentric circles almost, that at the center is your life, your story, your experiences, and then in part, the pop culture that you experienced and how that shaped you. And then even this wider lens of, and even if you're not me, you know, here are the other ways these things affected mm-hmm. many of us, right? So I loved just getting to get that lens inside of a book this way. That's such a great lens that you chose. I also really identified with the chapter about your name. I too have a name that comes from very interesting origin and is also considered to be a Muslim name because of the language it's in many languages because it's a derivative of amen. But I go mm-hmm. all sorts of places and people have various feelings. They have various different feelings around that. And you're yes. like, it's just my name. I'm just growing up as a person. But Now I'm here trying to get some copies made. And apparently the employee there is like, that's a Muslim name. And I'm like, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, that's the way we say amen in my country. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I really identified with just the beauty of the Stevie Wonder story that you told of the actual origin of how you became Aisha and the ever present song and pop culture phenomena of Another Bad Creation also.
Yes.
Singing this. Like, can you give us some thoughts about what was it like to write that? I thought it was a wonderful introduction to you in the book. Like, talk to us more about that.
Yeah, that was the very first essay that I wrote. And it was the one I actually included in my proposal to my editor to land the deal. And it was... to be honest, it was one of those things where I thought about, you know, what my name has meant and how people have, you know, reacted to it over the years. And now, even now, I'm still dealing with it in the sense that I've realized that this is just a hunch I have, but Uber and Lyft, when I'm trying to get them, a lot of times they will cancel on me. And I wonder if it's because of my name. I stopped putting my face, like I have a photo of my dog not there, but like now it's, I'm wondering if my name is also a concern. And then, you know, the ones who usually do pick me up tend to be Muslim or people who have Arabic names that sound like mine. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I'm still in this weird push and pull with that sort of thing, but it's I still love my name. But basically what the chapter is about is that I had sort of these two songs that were connected to my name, one in a way that I liked, and that's Stevie Wonder's Isn't She Lovely. Mm. And in that song, this is, of course, on Songs of the Key of Life. And he wrote it for his daughter, whose name is Aisha. And I feel like a lot of people don't like, it's not one of his like most famous songs, but it is on one of his most famous albums. And I think people know the song. But if you're not listening to the lyrics closely, the lyrics where he mentions her name could just glide right over you. Like no one's really thinking, oh, that's the song where he calls her Aisha. And then I came of age at a time when Another Bad Creation, who were... what I like to call the New Edition babies. They were kind of a spinoff of New Edition, and they range in age from like 8 to 12 years old. There are 5 or 6 of them, and they were kind of a boy group who had a hit song. It was a top 10 hit, Billboard hit in 1991 or 92. I can't remember. It's called Aisha. And anyone who's my age or a little bit older, it still happens to me to this day where they might, like, if I meet them for the first time, they'll be like, have you heard this? And like, I know which song you're talking about. Well, actually, sometimes it's that song. And another times it's like a French song. It's kind of by, I think, a Middle Eastern performer, and it's called Aisha. And it's just kind of like, Aisha. Aisha. It's either that song or that song. I didn't put that part in the book, but like there are other songs. No one thinks of the Stevie Wonder one. But yeah, I kind of went on a journey with how I reconciled the two of like Aisha being the Another Bad Creation being I don't know. It's not the most embarrassing song. Like, it's not like I'm named Roxanne and then like I have that song hanging over my head. Aisha was also one of those things where it's just like, oh, I wish people knew that there were other songs that have my name in it. So it was kind of a journey. And where that journey leads me is to sort of realizing how so much of my resistance to Another Bad Creation was built in, self-hatred to some point, or just not feeling comfortable about being a Black person, especially a Black person who grew up going to school with mostly white kids and then having to deal with everything that comes with that and what your name signifies and how I felt as though like, oh, my name is kind of quote unquote ghetto. That's not a term that I use anymore. But back in the 90s and the early 2000s, that was everywhere, right. Especially among white suburban kids. So it felt like a great sort of introduction to sort of where I was going with this piece, which is shining a light on sort of this, I think, something that a lot of people have had experiences with which is just the name that you're born with and not feeling comfortable with it. And then sort of the myths that we tell ourselves, the cultural myths that we tell ourselves more broadly. It was quite interesting to go on that journey. My dad, who was featured heavily in this first essay, helped me out a bit with some of my memory of things. But he appreciated it, I think.
Yeah. No, I love that. I really identified with that section of the book so much. Not even now that I think about it as much related to my name, but my face. By the time I got to be in my 20s, I would always, at that time, be confused with Cousin Pam, or people would walk up all the time and be like, you know who you look like? You look like, it was either, it depended on their age, if they would say Cousin Pam from The Cosby Show, or if they would say Maxine from Living Single. And I went through like a long period of my 20s that I was just like, I'm myself. I am not Maxine. I am not Cousin Pam. And then I would like get annoyed, like how many Uber and Lyft cars I would get in. And it would be the, you know who you look like? You remember that show? And I know where it's going. But I'm like, I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to help you think of this. I feel like I had to just have like a little come together meeting with myself and be like, okay, first of all, being accused of looking like Erica Alexander, girl, that's actually could be a great vibe for you.
Yes, the great and good Erica Alexander. Like, yes.
It's not a bad vibe for you, but I don't know why it just really got under my skin. I don't know if it felt this like sense of like, you feel like now you can't just be who you are because now that has to be the introduction conversation. You know, like it just took me so long of just finally being like, okay, girl, if you look like, well, of course, now they would say you look like Erica Alexander. They wouldn't say Cousin Pam or Maxine either.
Well, can I ask you, were these mostly Black people?
Yes, they were mostly Black people.
Yeah, because I don't know how many not Black people were familiar. Well, they might have been familiar with The Cosby Show, but probably maybe not Living Single. But I can understand that frustration because for me, when people were coming at me and like singing Another Bad Creation at me, it was a mixture of I had, you know, a 40 plus year old Asian dude who knew this song. I guess because it was a top 10 hit in the 90s. And I think it's, you know, especially in that era, white kids and white people were getting into hip hop more. It's tough because it does feel like people are unintentionally telling you your identity. Mm-hmm. And when really you're just like, I just want to be me.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Thank you.
that's the other thing is that, and what I hope to sort of lay out in the book is that so much of how we relate to each other is through pop culture.
Right.
Like, it's sports and it's pop culture. Those are the things where you can reasonably be able to carry on a complete conversation with a stranger at a bar about, like, you know, and not know anything else about them. But like, oh, I overheard you're talking about Succession, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I think that they're just trying to relate to you in some way. And even if it's annoying.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's human nature to some extent.
Right. Right. Okay. I want to ask another favorites question here. And this is about, in a way, it's about what will become throwback concerts. And this came up because a friend and I were at a concert recently. We were kind of looking around and being like, okay, I mean, I feel like the definition of auntie is a thing I would like other people to discuss with me sometimes, of like, I didn't think I was going to be an auntie at this age. That feels like it's coming down for us younger and younger, all those things. But we were like, what will it be like? What will our throwback concert be when we're in our 60s? My friend asked me this. And I remember my last college homecoming, watching the women who graduated college in like the 70s and 80s, it was Brick House for them. Like, when Brick House came on, they were like,
it's
all the shake it, everything. And I remember my friends and I in that moment looking at each other and going, is that going to be juvenile for us? Like, is that us in our...
That's already happening.
Is that us now? We're going to be... For the 99 and the 2000. So when you think of yourself, like, in true auntie season, Aisha, what are the songs or artists you imagine yourself still shaking it to? Or what's the concert you could see yourself going to at that point?
Okay, so I feel like the way that nostalgia happens even faster these days. Mm-hmm. So I think we're already in that era for that concert. Okay. I mean, what is Usher's Lovers and Friends Tour but a complete throwback
right.
to my era? Mm-hmm. Like, Usher's a decade older than me, but that sort of, he crosses multiple generations at this point. And, you know, when Confessions was out, I was a junior or senior in high school. So I think it's already happening. I've also, there's this party that I loved going to back when I lived on the East Coast. It was like it happened pretty often, like a few times a year. And they've toured around the country, and it's called Grits and Biscuits. And it's like all just Southern hip hop. It's turned into it started like over a decade ago, and then it turned into this huge thing. But one show I went to, they had Juvenile show up, and he did back that ass up. I don't know if I can curse on here.
Yes, we curse all the time. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was magical. So that is what I've been shaking still. I still love going to this thing. I'm seeing Janet again this summer, which I'm very excited for. Now, granted, like, her heyday. Well, no, because again, she's also covered. I mean, the first time I saw her was the All For You tour with my mom, which I shout out to my mom for taking 13-year-old me to see All For You, which, right. you know, may or may not have been that appropriate to see, but it's fine. yeah, so that would be my answer. Probably any kind of Southern hip hop, you know, if Britney and Christina were to tour together, which, like, I doubt will ever happen. And I want Britney to just be healthy and happy.
Right.
Doesn't sound like she wants a tour. But that would be another one where I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to be there. Like, yes. So
I like these choices. I told my friend, I said, I feel we might be 15 to 20 years away from this Destiny's Child reunion tour. Like like them, either them in their 60s or me in my 60s. That's my Rolling Stones, I feel. I feel like them tickets Seriously. Come out. I don't care how old I am. I'm going to be like, we getting them tickets right now. I'm going to go there and lose my breath and everything else.
I'm just waiting. I want that to happen so badly. The only time I saw Destiny's Child was when they opened for TLC on their fan mail tour. And this was literally like 2 months before they did the whole lineup change. So it was the original four Destiny's Child.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Like, Writings on the Wall had just come out like a few weeks earlier. And then, of course, everything changed very quickly.
So many things changed. What's our hearts?
Yeah. But I would love to see the legendary lineup, the most lasting lineup in concert.
Yeah. I would pay good money for that. Okay. I want to talk TV. I want to know, when you think about your young self, could your young self have imagined that watching television would actually be a part of your job, Aisha?
I think about this very often, how I'm just like, all those hours I spent in front of the TV as a kid paid off. It's like I would not have imagined it. I don't think I would have imagined it even like 15, 20 years ago when I was in college. Well, I'm not that old, but like when I was in college, like, I don't think I would have imagined that. I thought I was going to be a Broadway performer, or like at least like doing regional theater somewhere. And I did do that for a very, very hot second after I graduated. I do have a degree in theater. But it's so weird to me to think about how I've been able to parlay this into a career. And I consider myself very lucky to be able to do so.
Yeah.
And write about movies and all these things. Like, these are the things that I love to do. And I realize that a lot of people, especially in journalism, are not able to do that, or at least not do it to the extent that I am. And, media is crumbling before our eyes. So who knows what my future holds? But for now, I'm feeling good and thankful. And I just want our profession to get even to be better. Yeah. Like, just even like following these writer strikes, it's very disheartening and frustrating to see that people who make the things that we love can't get paid what they're worth.
Right.
I didn't pursue theater in part because I didn't want to be a starving artist. Granted, being in media is not, it's not like I'm rolling in dough and I'm still paying off my student loans, and probably will be until I'm 50 or 60, or until Biden finally does the right thing and just so lets us all,
sets us all free from that. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But yes, very lucky, very thankful.
I really loved about your book, just getting to read you and know more about you as a person, but getting to read you even deeper as a journalist writer, as a critic, and even getting to read you writing about why critics are important to what we're doing, and some of the sticky conversations that, people in your profession end up in. I really appreciated getting to hear some of that lens from you. I had a mentor once when I was writing more music journalism, and he would say, study the culture. He would say, if there's a thing I would tell you, study that. And I think in reading this book, it was so wonderful to read someone very studied on pop culture, on what you like and what you enjoyed, but also on the greater ramifications of the TV we're watching, of the films we like or don't like, of the film and TV we feel we should like, even if we don't like it. So I want to ask you a couple of TV things. I want to know, do you have a favorite TV guilty pleasure or not so guilty pleasure?
So we've actually done an episode on Pop Culture Happy Hour about this before, but I love court TV shows.
Okay.
So Judge Judy, even though I recognize that she's very problematic, for various reasons, including just being very pro-police sometimes, where it doesn't necessarily warrant that, at least from my outside perspective. And also Judge Me Leon on People's Court. I love that show. I in my earlier years, I definitely dabbled in the other court shows like Judge Mathis and those sort of things. But I prefer my Judy and my Judge Me Leon. it's definitely a guilty pleasure of mine. It's just, I don't know too many people my age who watch that stuff. The thing is, I started watching Judge Judy when I was a kid because my Nana, my great grandmother, who we call Nana, like when she would come over and stay with us, like during the day, she would have Judge Judy on. And so I got into Judge Judy, and now, she's, I gotta say, she's the one who more or less introduced it to me. And, I love her. She's no longer with us, but, yeah, she, that was something she imparted on me. That and like, she always had Murder, She Wrote and, Matlock on in the background. And I just started watching Murder, She Wrote, like in earnest, because I knew it, like it was in the ether, but I am now watching it on, whatever streaming, I think it's on Peacock. So I'm going through it now and I'm like, oh my God, I love this. And I know I can understand why my Nana loved it too, because it's just, it's got a formula. You get in, you get out. You've got all these old classic Hollywood actors who are now in their later years, and they just pop up. I'm like, oh, look, there's that, you know, Hollywood performer from whatever movie that I've seen. Yeah. So anyway, to answer your question again, Judge Judy, Judge Mealy, guilty pleasure.
I respect this as a choice. I want to thank you for bringing Murder, She Wrote into the chat. My grandmother's show back in the day was The People's Court with Judge Wapner. And actually, it had a really banging theme song. Like, I still remember the ba-dum bump. Like, it had a very
still
nice
that theme song.
That theme song. Yes. That theme song did some things. Yes, the percussion. I was like, y'all really put some layers into this. Like, I like that. I also appreciated you even bringing a Murder, She Wrote into your book when you were talking about, you had a chapter on, I'm not going to say the name of the chapter correctly, but you had a chapter on just the expectations of procreation on women. And you talked about this character in Murder, She Wrote and how we are just watching her live her fancy free life until somebody gets murdered. And now she got to like stop her wonderful, you know, child-free life and get over here and try to figure out who murdered this person. I just like appreciated those little Easter eggs throughout the book.
Yes, Jessica Fletcher was one of our few representations of, especially an older woman who did not have kids, and seemed to be really happy about it, you know, or just no hangups about it. She had plenty of nieces and nephews who would always come on the show, and then like sometimes they would be somehow involved with a murder or whatever. But like, you know, she was literally an auntie. She was just like, I don't have kids. I'm living my life. I'm sure the show has been made so many times, but I often wonder at what point did she start going places and just wonder, okay, so who's going to get murdered at this new place that I'm visiting?
Like everywhere every she went, she on vacation, she going shopping, somebody is murdered.
Yes.
Now that you have taken this book idea from conception to now at the listening of this, your book will be out. What has been your favorite thing about working on this book that you can think of?
Oh, I'm such a tortured writer. I find it so tedious and stressful and anxious. I do think being done with it is probably my favorite part. But that's the thing, is like, it's not just unique to this book, although this is by far the greatest undertaking on a single project that I've had to do. And it's taken me the longest time. This is like 2-ish years out of my life. And some of that was during the pandemic. So like, add on all those stressors of what was happening at the very beginning of the pandemic. It was a lot, but I'm just generally speaking, even if I only have to write like an 800 word review, it stresses me out to no end. why I keep doing it and why I keep coming back to it is because I like the feeling of accomplishment once it's done. And I enjoy the editing process as well. I like being able to work with an editor, to sort of refine things or to make things clearer, or, you know, sometimes just like completely ditch a whole idea and be like, this isn't working, and just being afraid to kill your darlings. But yeah, I think it's just nice to have it out in the world and know that people, you know, the small feedback I've gotten so far from people who were not at all associated with the book, I think has been really heartening. And it makes me realize why I wrote the book in the first place. So, yeah, it's been it's been a journey.
I love that. And I very much identify with you saying the part about being done with it. Yes. Book writing be hard out here. It be hard. It's like, it's beautiful when you can get to the end of it and say that you finished it. But all of them things leading up, it'd be hard. Like when I finished my first book, my husband was like, "You finished. Let's go celebrate." I literally sat down at the kitchen table and was like, like just started crying. I can't even tell you why I was crying. I'm just like, I'm sorry. I can't do the brownies because I really need to sit here and cry for a few minutes. Like, it is hard. So I'm just really shout out to you, Aisha, for doing something that is as difficult as writing in general and now writing this book. And I really hope that you take all the opportunities to celebrate yourself because you deserve it.
Yes. I've mostly just been like relaxing a lot more, which is not usually my mood anyway. I'm a very kind of naturally anxious person, which I'm trying to work on. But, you know, I didn't take any book leave from my NPR job. I took a day or two here and there, but I didn't take an extensive book leave. And so I was working all day and then trying to gear myself up to work, like to write at night. And I don't recommend it. 0 out of 10 stars. Would not do again.
Do not visit that restaurant.
Yeah. But I also, you know, I needed to, you know, keep making money.
Right. So, right. Right. You know. For sure. Okay. Last question for you. And then I want everyone to get all the information they can about how to follow you and how to make sure they can buy this book, buy lots of them.
Yes.
So my last question is, when the reader, if they have a physical copy, gets to the end, they close this book. If they have their e-copy, they've swiped through the pages, they've gotten to the end of this book. What do you hope readers feel or gain from having read your book?
I hope they feel a little bit smarter, a little bit more, I can go to this party or hang out with these people and then like have some talking points to bring to them. And I also hope they've had a chance to laugh a little bit and really think about the things that they love when it comes to pop culture and what their own relationship is to it. I don't know if that type of the type of person to be very hostile on social media is going to read this book. But if you think that might be you and you do read it, maybe you'll come away and say, maybe I don't need to get upset when a critic says that they don't like this piece of pop culture that I really like. I quote him, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but you know, I mentioned a moment from the Kenny G documentary where he's like explaining in part, and this is why I kind of, this is why I respect this man, because he, the whole point of the documentary is sort of wrestle with how this best-selling musician is also one of the like most critically reviled artists. And he's very aware of this. And he explains it like, you know, people will say like, I like this, don't you? And then that person says, no, I don't like this, you do. And he basically says like, it makes you feel, it hurts you. It makes you feel like it's personal. And I want people to take away, yes, it is personal, but it also doesn't have to be all the time. And we can like the things that we like to a degree. I mean, I'm not advocating for certain things that might actually physically hurt or just cause harm or in any way. I'm not playing, you know, the devil's advocate here. I'm just saying we don't need to take everything so personally. And I think it would be, well, I'll just feel better. Yeah. About that. You know, if I say something about Marvel, I don't need people getting really upset with me about it. But
two things can be true. You could love that and this other person just doesn't. And that's okay.
Exactly. It's okay.
It's okay. That's what we're trying
to
say. Where can the people follow you? And where can the people buy 5 copies of this book? And listeners, this is why I'm saying 5 copies. Number one, buying 5 copies supports an author. Okay. Number two, you got your copy. You got 4 more to give away. You got 4 more in case somebody comes to the house and they're like, oh, I always wanted to read her book. Now you don't have to give away your copy because you bought five of them. You can just be like, here you go. It's a constant gift. It keeps on giving. So where can the people buy five copies of Aisha Harris's Wannabe, Reckonings with the Pop Culture That Shapes Me? And where can the people follow? Tell us everything.
Oh my goodness. That's such a great, yes, I love it. Encourage the five copies. So of course I want to say, support your local bookstore. I'm not sure when this is dropping, but if you pre-order it from Malik Bookstore, which is in my current place, my current place of dwelling in Oakland, California, it is the oldest Black owned independent bookstore in the country. And if you pre-order it from them, they will ship it to you wherever you are and it will come signed by me. So that's an option. But also your local bookseller, go to them, request it. And of course, Amazon. I did an audiobook.
Okay.
I recorded the audiobook, which is interesting because recording audio, like reading is very different from reading a book for audio is very, very different from writing for audio. So, but you'll get to hear me do my best impression of Dave Chappelle. So if you want to get the audiobook, you can do that. And Amazon and all the other, you know, Barnes and Noble, all those other places. And then you can follow me. I'm still on Twitter for the foreseeable future. We'll see.
It's been a time.
The ship is still hobbling along. Mm-hmm. So you can find me on Twitter at Crafting My Style. And on Instagram, if you want to see both me promoting my book, but also cute photos of my dogs, at AHA88. So that's AHA, the number 88. And that's where I am these days. I'm a little too old to be on TikTok, so you won't find me there. But that's it. Oh, and of course on NPR, doing all the culture-y things and pop culture happy hour. I'm not on every episode, but we've got four co-hosts and it's a great time. And if you're ever looking for that movie, TV show, book, album that you are excited about or want to hear us discuss, we're trying to cover a lot of things. So we cover Marvel. We do. I'm not usually on those episodes, but we do. And we cover a lot of things. So that's where you can find me.
Love it. Y'all make sure I go to there. All of these things will also be in the show notes, y'all, at aminabrown.com/her with Amina. Aisha, thank you for sharing your story and your life with us in this book. Thank you for giving us intelligent things to say at dinner parties and at other sundry networking events. Yes. Thank you for giving us this wonderful lens on pop culture, how it motivates us, how it upsets us, how it changes us, how it inspires us. Just appreciate your work so much. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. And thank you for creating this sort of space for authors like myself to talk about the things that we love in our writing. I really appreciate it.
Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles.
Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at babybrezza.com.